Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:51 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time, and today is December 15th. Well, 10-year Treasury yields were a little higher in here today, and that sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact. The U.S. government looks like they are going to push through a $900 billion stimulus. It's looking increasingly likely that that will be the case. So the stock market took a leg higher. The primary indices were all up in excess of 1%. The S&P 500, a little bit below its peak, but certainly this has looked like a very orderly consolidation in the region, or just above, really, the peaks from back in early September through to November. And as long as that 3,600 point level holds, I think there aren't going to be too many people worried about the stock market. When we think about the NASDAQ, it's also been consolidating in the region of the peak from all the way back in September, but small caps are outperforming, and the Russell was at a new all-time high and continues to extend that period of clear outperformance. Well, this is obviously a short-term overbought condition, but at the same time, it's a lengthy range, and ranges are explosions waiting to happen. It will require a very clear downward dynamic to question the pattern of outperformance for small caps. So why is it that small caps are doing better? Well, I think when we think about, for example, large cap growth fund by Schwab. It's an ETF that holds or that has a significant market cap, about 13 billion. And when we look at the holdings, well, then 40% of the index are represented by Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Facebook, Tesla. So these are companies that have done spectacularly well this year. For a large cap growth fund, it has done really extremely well, going up from the lows back in February, March, around the 70 area to 125 is really spectacular in terms of performance for very large cap companies. But of course, people are asking questions. Are they likely to double again in 2021? How could the environment get even better? Are we going to have an equally large number of people working from home, or a similarly large but even the growth rate next year for that number? So that's quite unlikely. And then when we think about, well, are they going to bring out new products that will force adoption? Well, we may have seen that already this year. So there is at least some reticence to continue to pour money into these companies. Well, people still want innovation, so there has been a migration into these types of ETFs. ARK Invest has done spectacularly well in terms of attracting capital, so they've done even better, but it's an extremely exaggerated trend, and it's now got a market cap greater than the large cap fund. It's at 16 billion. So there has been just an extraordinary amount of money flowing into these stocks. And of course, Tesla has been one of the clear beneficiaries. It's the big holding in a lot of these ARK funds. Of course, Tesla is one of these companies that has done spectacularly well as well from the pandemic environment, and most of the reason for that is because it's a lightning rod for speculation. It has been one of the most rewarding and indeed the primary avenue through which people have played leverage in this bull market, and it has done really phenomenally well, going from less than 100 in March to 634 today is really a spectacular move. Now, when we think about the PE ratio, 1,000 on the historic PE, 283 on the forward PE, we're talking about very significant numbers here. the kind of impact that's going to have on the valuation of the S&P 500 when it eventually does enter the market is going to be spectacularly influential. And the historic PE is already at 28 before Tesla comes in. So it's bound to rise because Tesla is going to be a top 8 or top 7 constituent of the index. So there's obviously going to be an impact there. Of course, we also have lots of other companies outside of the S&P 500 that are sporting very significant PE ratios. Shopify is certainly one of those, but it's been largely range bound for most of the last 4 months. When people look at these very highly valued companies and look at how spectacularly well they've done already, well, the easy conclusion would be to think that, well, something else is probably going to do best in 2021. And the stocks that have done worst this year are likely to do better because we're getting vaccines. And it's increasingly likely that Moderna's vaccine is going to be approved within the week and that rollouts and inoculations will start. By the time we get to the end of the first quarter, it's very likely that anyone who wants a vaccine will probably have access to one. And when we have a vaccination regime that can cover health workers and cover the most at-risk populations of over 60s, then there is very small reason to really pay attention to why we should continue to lock down. We do not need to have a 100% inoculation in order to open up economies again. The primary rationale for closing down economies was to stop the overwhelming of the healthcare system. If we protect older people, protect healthcare, then it leaves a lot of room for the rest of the market to open up. And I do believe that's why mid caps and small caps are doing better overall. They are much more levered to domestic economies. That's the additional reason why the mid-cap sector is also pushing on to new high ground. But it's also something that we're seeing in a large number of other markets. So mid-cap sectors have been doing better. The FTSE 250, of course, has got this continued question about the whether there is going to be a deal or not for Brexit. I remain of the opinion that it is more likely than not there will be a deal. It is likely to be very limited in nature, but it will make for a positive headline. And I think that's really all that the market wants. They want a positive headline. Now, when we get down to the existential arguments about what's best for the UK over the longer term, there are going to be a lot of very strong opinions expressed, but unfortunately, the market doesn't care. What the market is looking at is whether we're going to have significant economic disruption within the next 3 months. And the rebound in the pound versus the euro today and pushing back above the 110 area suggests that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt that that is unlikely. Then, when we think about Germany, the MDAX has also continued to do reasonably well in here, and the German index was also up about 1% today. I think important point about the performance that we're seeing right across the European region is that both the pound and the euro are stronger against the dollar. So this is a very different environment than what we've had over the last few years, because since about 2012, any real significant performance by Europe was predicated on a weak currency. It was exactly the same for the UK. It was also true for Japan. And what we've seen more recently is that with the dollar going down and with investors increasingly looking for to try and attract yield or capture yield, and also looking at potential recovery, and also thinking about the massive quantity of debt that the US government has printed is likely to continue to print and the size of the deficits, then investors are increasingly just looking for somewhere a little bit more fiscally responsible to park money. Well, if we were to look at Europe on aggregate rather than as individual countries, then they do have a lower debt to GDP ratio overall, and that alone is reason to give it a second look from the perspective of an institutional investor. Then, of course, we have the fact that the dollar is pushing on to new recovery lows. I am looking increasingly at the Bloomberg Dollar Index because it has more weightings for bigger currencies in the emerging markets, particularly the Chinese renminbi and the Indian rupee. But the broad point is that increasingly what we're seeing is that the nominal price appreciation on Wall Street is predicated on a weak currency, and the absolute price appreciation that we're seeing in Europe and Japan is predicated on a somewhat stronger currency. And that is the complete opposite of what has been evident in markets for quite some time. Now, the Nikkei has been consolidating over the last 3 weeks, but it continues to hold this very clear breakout from a 3-year range, and it is looking like a new medium-term uptrend. When we think about what's going on in terms of the yen, well, the yen has been holding an uptrend against the dollar for a few years now, but it has been very mild in nature. Every single time it gets down to around this 104 level, then we've seen evidence of the Bank of Japan stepping in to knock the yen back. But in the global game of currencies, where no country wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker one more than others, well, there is nobody out there right now willing to print the same quantity of money as the US government and Federal Reserve is, and therefore it is more likely than not we're going to see a continued downtrend in the dollar versus most currencies. Of course, that raises particular questions for China. The Chinese renminbi was in stronger territory in here today. The pace of its advance has moderated somewhat, but there is still a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs in its favor. Then when we think about the government bond yield, well, the interest rate differential that we're seeing is really quite acute. And at 3.29%, 10-year government bonds in China are looking very attractive from the perspective of an investor who is looking at a global environment where there has been a record quantity of negative yielding debt, and it exceeded 18 trillion yesterday. This is a profound development for institutional and fixed income investors. They really are scrounging and searching all over the world for anywhere that they can capture a yield in an appreciating currency. Well, the only places that they can find anything like that is in the emerging markets. China obviously is a better credit overall than India is, but the rupee is appreciating. And when we look at the government bond yield for India, it's at 5.88%. and has been reasonably steady over the course of the last 6 months. Therefore, there is likely to be significant additional funds plowed into China and other emerging markets, and there will obviously be a ladder of risk that various investors will be happy to commit to based upon just what their volatility tolerance levels are. With money flowing into China in particular, and with the stock market appreciating, well, then the question is, will this, with the bond market being attractive, how much will China's domestic competitiveness be influenced by that appreciating currency? The Shenzhen Shanghai 300 has been, or the CSI 300 has been ranging now for the last month above its range that began back in July. If we think about the banking sector, it's been ranging for a much lengthier period of time, but it did rebound off the lows in here today. If the banking sector can improve from here, then, and most particularly sustain a move above 16,000, then that would lend credibility to the potential for the wider stock market to do better. It is potentially possible that we will see banks do better because the central government is making more money available. What's happening in banking sectors internationally, I think, is interesting because one thing that has characterized the imposition of, or I guess the response of governments to the pandemic was to take over the credit decisions of banking sectors. That was significantly true in the USA, where the banks were simply given funds to lend and told to just lend, lend, lend. Well, S&P 500 banks continue to be reasonably steady, and they've been performing reasonably well, but obviously nowhere near the peak from earlier this year. If we think about the regional banks, which tend to be smaller and more levered, they continue to rebound in a more impressive manner. This is also representative of the change in tone from larger cap to smaller cap companies. When we think about the European banking sector, well, the decision by the ECB today to allow them to begin to pay dividends again has been positive. And we are seeing that an increasing number of banks are becoming more serious about handling their overall exposure in terms of non-performing loans. But the European banks index now is pausing around the 80 level. And we can see clearly on the 10-year chart that 80 had been an area of support between 2011-12 and 2020. Now it's a potential area of resistance. If it can sustain the move above 80, well, then it will represent a failed downside break and then potentially a return to medium-term demand dominance. And there, the low level at which European banks are trading would obviously be helped by economic revival. And it is likely that we're going to see a return to global growth in 2021 for the simple reason that every government has been engaging in liquidity provision, and nobody is going to be eager to raise interest rates. So the lack of a clear discount rate is likely to continue to have a stimulative effect on just about all asset classes. Of course, what we're also starting to see now is that banks are starting to wind down their demand for deposits. For example, when we think about Capital One, at one point during the crisis, they had been offering money market rates at about 90 basis points, which was really quite a lot, considering that money market rates were in the region of about 1 or 2 basis points. Now they're starting to call around to customers and they're halving the rate that they're offering. So that was an emergency measure earlier in the year because they were fearful about the impact that the coronavirus and the pandemic and the lockdowns were all going to have. And now, with the additional liquidity that's coming through, with recovery coming through in a larger number of sectors, then they don't have to offer the same cover to continue to hold on to those deposits. So that's a significant vote of confidence in their business. And we're starting to see that in a larger number of the banks. And if banks are doing well, then they're also in a better position to lend. The big difference in this environment relative to what we saw back in 2008 is that we've been through a period of balance sheet correction for a large number of financial institutions. Now, obviously, then there are also companies that came into being after the big credit crisis in 2008-09. A number of those are now starting to come to market as IPOs, and that's certainly something that will give us some insight into how are those newer companies levered, particularly to the mortgage markets. But the one thing that held back inflation after the credit crisis was the inability of banks to lend. They literally parked trillions on their balance sheets in aggregate and picked up the return from them. In many respects, it was the banking equivalent of financial repression. And when we had financial repression in the 1930s, what the government in the USA did was to set the rate at which they were willing to lend, and then made sure that it was below the rate of inflation. And what banks did was they captured a return based upon the steep yield curve, and they did not lend, and they just held the money. Well, then when we think about what is likely next, banks are in a position to extend credit. And in a recovery scenario, they'll be encouraged to do so. And they will be, in many respects, preserved from taking the risk on their balance sheets. So there is the clear scope that we are moving into a new inflationary cycle. The fact that the dollar was down and stock markets were up and gold was recovering in here today, up $26. This now looks like a higher reaction low in the short term. Obviously, there's still a sequence of lower rally highs, but it is certainly looking like encouraging action. When we then think about GDX, it has paused in the region of 35. It didn't rally in a dynamic manner today, but if gold continues to rally, it will take the gold shares with it. When we think about some of, I looked at, for example, Barrick Gold yesterday. Then when we think about, for example, Trans-Siberian Gold, they've got an estimated PE of 7 and a yield of 6.9. Well, that's the kind of yield that's going to be attractive to investors. And when we think about the chart patterns and the potential for dividend growth, then you just don't get that in other sectors. When companies can grow dividends at 20 to 40% and have competitive yields and have a product which is increasing in price, those are the kinds of really attractive characteristics from a value investor's perspective. And it's the kind of margin that a company can pick up in the technology sector. But the technology sector is now very highly valued, and some of these companies are at very low valuations. And that, I think, is one of the most important factors, that if gold starts to steady again, and it is looking increasingly likely that that is the case, then gold miners are still very cheap relative to the wider market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.